And good morning again to all of you. And I have an opening story. It's about a couple that were childhood sweethearts. And they were celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. And so what they opted to do on this day, is because they remained in the neighborhood where they grew up, is they walked over to the school where they first met. And they found that seventh grade classroom, and that desk was still there in which the gentleman, Bob, had carved out in the desk, "Bob loves Sally." And then they gently kissed, and they walked home. And on the way home, an armored car buzzed around the corner, and a bag of money fell virtually at their feet. So she picked it up, they took it home, and she counted it, and there were $50,000 in the bag. And Bob looks at Sally and says, "We got to give it back." And Sally says, "Finders keepers." And she takes the bag upstairs and she hides it in the attic. And the next day, two FBI agents come knocking at the door and they say, "Excuse us, but you by any chance find any money yesterday?" And Sally says, "No." And Bob says, "She's lying. She took the money and she hid it upstairs in the attic." And Sally says, "Don't listen to him. He's been getting kind of confused at times lately." And so the FBI agent looks at Bob and says, "Why don't you just sit down and tell me the whole story, and let's start at the very beginning." And so Bob says, "Well, yesterday Sally and I were holding hands, walking home from school," and the FBI agent turns to his partner and says, "Let's get out of here. This is a waste of time." This story is definitely on key with today's lesson, as you'll discover later on. When I was a young boy, I'm ashamed to admit it, but I frequently would fake illness so I did not have to go to school. And I think Mom always knew that I was faking it, but she never put up much of a fight. And so I would spend the day watching television, and I really liked watching game shows. And there was one game show in particular that I thought was truly fascinating. It's called To Tell the Truth. And it aired, I believe, in the late 50s and definitely went into the early 60s. And now I think on Sunday nights, a whole new version of this program is airing. And if you're unfamiliar with the show, let me just give you the basic format. It goes like this. At the beginning, three contestants come out, all of which claim to be the very same exact person, and all of them have something going on. They either have worked or are working in a very interesting job, or maybe they have had some unique life experience. And so one example from one of the shows is that there were three contestants, all claiming to be the same person and all claiming to be the chief dessert chef at the White House during the last couple of administrations. And another one that goes back to one of the earlier shows is three gentlemen got up and they each claimed to be the same person, and they each claimed to have undergone a 20-year hiatus with amnesia. And then there's a panel consisting of four people, and the panel members are entitled to ask any questions they want of the three contestants in order to determine who's the real deal, who's really telling the truth here. And the only rule involved is that the person who is the real person absolutely must answer the questions honestly and truthfully. And then when the questioning is over, the panel members vote as to who they think is really telling the truth. And what's fascinating about the program, as far as I'm concerned, is how often they got it wrong. I mean, they had complete access to dig away and probe and ask any questions that they want. And it was extremely rare that all four panelists would unanimously decide on the correct person. In fact, for most of the shows, a majority of the panel would actually come away and get it wrong. And I open with this today because our talk topic today is truth or consequences, which coincidentally is a whole new game show that we don't have time to go into today. And you're probably thinking, well, truth or consequences, this is going to be an easy one. You get up there and say either you live your truth or you face the consequences. But that's much too simple. You're way beyond that level of sophistication. But I open with the story because it illustrates just how elusive that the truth can be sometimes. Back when I was in seminary, we used to regard ourselves and refer to ourselves as truth seekers or truth students, a tradition that goes way back in the Unity School of Christianity. But one day when I was at a chapel service that was being conducted by one of my classmates, as part of her message that day, she made a very bold statement. She said, "We are not truth seekers. We are truth livers." And I remember hearing that and just having this real uneasy feeling. You know, somehow it just smacked of a bit of arrogance and sounded kind of self-righteous that it really left me feeling uncomfortable. But again, you go back to that premise of the truth can be so elusive. And so I share with you now, if it ever were the case that I were subpoenaed and called to be a witness in some sort of a court trial, and the question was put to me, "Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?" I think I would have to answer that question, no. I don't have any problem with telling the truth, and I'm okay, I'm cool with nothing but the truth. But that part about the whole truth gives me issue. Because I think that everybody has part of the whole truth, but nobody owns the whole truth. So maybe we need to make another distinction or two here to clarify what I'm talking about. Each and every one of us has part of the whole truth. And we call that truth with a small t. And this is the truth that is our truth. This is the truth that has been given to us by our families and by our culture. This is the truth that we have learned in school. This is the truth that has been shared with us by loved ones. This is the truth that comes to us through our senses. And this is the truth that we learn by virtue of the life we live and the experiences that we have. But again, we call this truth, truth with a small t, and with a very good reason. Because when we talk about the truth with a capital T, we are actually talking about God. And God is so deep, so vast, so expansive, so wondrous, and so is also so incomprehensible that for anybody to lay claim that they know the truth about or the truth of God is the absolute definition of idolatry. And yet, every faith tradition, every religion, going way back to paganism in its early days, and right up through the Greeks and Romans, and right up to current day, including the Unity movement, has been guilty of this at one time or another. And you might be sitting there and saying, "Whoa, wait a minute here. You know, I understand those pagans running around worshiping the sun and the moon and snakes and cows and who knows what else. They certainly had it wrong. And I get the part about the Greeks and the Romans running around worshiping multiple gods. They absolutely didn't get it right. And of course, there's traditional Christianity with its emphasis on dogma. They got the wrong picture. But do you really want to suggest that new thought and unity is off key? So let me repeat. When we talk about truth with a capital T, we are referring to nothing less than God and nobody. No faith tradition, no religion, no system of beliefs, no movement, nobody can ever fully capture that divine essence, because that divine essence just cannot be captured. And so you might say, well, if this is the case, it's just a bit of a problem. This is kind of a dilemma for us. I mean, think about it. How could we confidently live our lives if we know that all that we know is at least somewhat flawed or incorrect? And if you're standing up there asking us to examine our deep core beliefs and our spiritual guidelines and principles that we rely on so much, well, I mean, it's the case that with the next step that we take, we're not going to be sure if our foot's going to land on concrete or quicksand. So let's go back a little bit to that part and earlier in the talk when I shared about my classmate making that proclamation that we are truth livers. You see, I think she got the first part wrong when she said, we are not truth seekers. But I believe she got the second part right, that we are truth livers, because the fact of the situation is that they're both right and they're compatible. Because at the end of the day, all that you are ever left with is your God. And you either live your life according to your understanding of that God, or by default, you have chosen another God. And when it's all said and done, your life is a reflection of what you worship. And the nature of life is such that it's very demanding. It's wanting to be lived now, every day, every moment of every day. And we don't really have the luxury of sitting around and contemplating this for a couple of decades. But the fact of the matter is, if you truly believe that the sun revolves around the earth instead of the other way around, then you are going to live your life according to that principle. If you really believe that the earth is flat, then you're going to live your life being careful not to sail over the edge. If you really believe that your habits, your routines, your addictions are your salvation, then you are determining your God in your true reality. And if you think that the only way that you could come to realize love and acceptance is by catering to what the world is trying to sell to you, then you have defined your God. And what you really have done is you've taken your truth with that small t and you've capitalized it. So that becomes your reality. Back in 1985, the BBC ran a really interesting program called The Day the Universe Changed. And I looked it up. The episodes are available on YouTube. I highly recommend this. It's so incredibly well done. And what it is, it's a 10-part series, a documentary that leads us on a tour throughout the history of humankind to demonstrate that throughout the centuries, the universe was changed when humankind came to a different appreciation of what was real compared to what had been. And so the universe was changed the day that humankind realized that it was the earth that rotated around the sun. And it was the universe changed the day that humanity realized that the earth actually was round instead of flat. And the universe changed the day that penicillin was discovered by accident. And the series does a wonderful job of demonstrating how so many of these incredibly significant moments in human history really were very often afterthoughts or offshoots of something completely different, or the ball got rolling by some crazy accidental thing like an apple falling on Sir Isaac Newton's head. But there are two important aspects to come away with from this series. The first is that in that transition period where humankind came to learn that there was a different, more correct perspective, humankind itself was forever changed. And so with every aha moment, there was a birth of a new consciousness, and people could never be the same after that, even if people tried desperately to cling to the old system of beliefs. It couldn't happen. And the second and even more significant aspect is with each transition of perception, humankind itself became a wee bit more of a real force in actively being able and empowered to change the universe. Think about it. It's really a pretty dynamic concept. The incredible power of mind and the realities that take shape when we're able to glean a little bit closer, a bit more of the truth. We don't have an easy task before us because on the one hand, we're being called to be on this ongoing quest to try to come up with, to determine at least a little bit more of the truth. And all the while, somewhere in our consciousness, there's the realization that to the extent that we are successful, we might be confronted with having to go back and jettison and let go and release that significant truth that was so important to us as recently as yesterday. But on the other hand, we're asked to live our truth by living our life as closely as possible according to that truth that we think is real and significant at any given moment. No wonder we're messed up. But this is the reality that faces us. And so there's an element of threat, and there's an element of danger and excitement to some extent. Right now, as we speak, I have a grandson who's away at college in the city of, my gosh, I forgot the name of the city, in South Carolina. But anyway, it's right in the teeth of Hurricane Florence, or what was Hurricane Florence. And the family obviously is concerned. But we spoke to Ben, and he said, you know, I'm good. I have a lot of water stocked up, and I have food. And if need be, I could hunker down for quite a bit. Still, there's some aspect of uneasiness and nervousness because of the danger that's involved. And then Susan and I got to talking about this, and we said, yeah, you know, all of that's true. And we're going to affirm that he's going to be all right. And then there's an element to the whole thing that is exciting. There's an aspect to the whole thing that is exhilarating. And this could be a real, honest-to-goodness, defining moment for him. An opportunity for him to know a little bit more about the truth and a little bit more of coming into his own truth. And so all of us have to weather the storms that come at us in life. Health problems in our relationships, always a stick of money problems, right? And any time that we have ever had to endure pain, or any time that we are enduring pain in the present moment. These things are unavoidable. Every one of us, we all suffer loss at one time or another. And yet every one of these are opportunities for us to arrive at our own defining moment. Because crises often have a way of pressing the issue and forcing us to identify our God and to determine our real truth. And then when it's all said and done, we have that pleasant task of sitting back and seeing just how much we want those two to merge together to become one. Well, always I like to ask the question, what are we talking about? What is ours to do? I mean, we're sitting here on this incredibly gorgeous Sunday morning in late summer, in the warmth and comfort, the non-threatening environment of our church family. And really, really, what is ours to do? And if you are really good Unity folks, you probably went immediately to that place, well, prayer and meditation. And you'd be exactly right. Because always it's so important for us to go directly to that source of the truth. And it's really important for us to hone our mystical powers. But today, well, let me back up a little bit. And when we lead people in prayer and meditation, we generally start with that invitation of take everything that's bugging you, all of your problems, your cares, your worries, your woes, your sufferings, your calendar, your to-do list, and leave them behind, leave them at the door. And that's important because the fewer distractions that we have going into meditation, the easier it is for us to commune with divine mind, to be in a sense of true oneness with spirit. But today I have another suggestion for you. In addition to leaving all of your problems and issues and that bag of garbage behind, the next time you go into prayer and meditation, leave your beliefs behind. I mean, certainly, as we've talked about, they've got to be tinged, flawed at least a little bit. And when you go into meditation, what do you need them for anyway? Why not go into prayer with an understanding that there are absolutely no sacred cows? Why not go into meditation in a true sense of being naive and being innocent like a little child? Why not go into prayer and meditation unclothed, so to speak, ready, willing, eager, and anxious to meet your God and to come closer to your truth without any preconceptions whatsoever? Because again, nobody owns the truth with a capital T. That fact is what inspired Meister Eckhart to pray, "Oh God, rid me of my God." Because he understood that the moment you have it all figured out, then what you have done is placed yourself in the maze of life that no matter which way you turn, you're going to run into a wall. You know, we go back to that program to tell the truth. And you might say, well, those people got fooled because the deceptors were really good at it. And there's certainly an element of that involved, but I don't think that's the main reason. I think that those panelists consistently got fooled because they were determined to determine the truth based upon their own filters. And so the very questions that they asked sprung forth from those filters. And when the data started coming back from the answers that were received, the brains just went into those preconceived file cabinets and started slotting things away. And even that silly story that I opened up with, that FBI agent did the same thing. When he heard that response, he immediately slotted it away, even though Bob in that story was telling the truth. He was prevented from seeing it, hearing it, understanding it. And I have another suggestion for you this morning. Every once in a while, you got to get scientific. So if you're listening to that still small voice and you get the message coming back to you that you are whole, that you are worthwhile, that you are loved, why not test it out? When you are hearing that still small voice and receive that message, why don't you bring that forth in your everyday existence? Why don't you introduce that concept, even on the smallest chance that what you're hearing is correct, that suggestion that you are whole and worthwhile and loved is real? Why not introduce that into every single one of your relationships? Instead of reverting to form and doing business as usual, why don't you show up in terms of your understanding of who and what you truly are? Early on, actually, it was kind of like a pre-dating time for Susan and me. I remember she walked out of the health club and I met her in a parking lot. And there she stood without an ounce of makeup. And I don't know if her hair had just been washed or needed to be washed. And she looked at me with a half grin and she says, "Well, you've seen it all now." And I just remember being overwhelmed with her willingness to put herself forth and allow herself to be vulnerable. And it opened me up to being able to see her beauty both outside and within. I understand, I'm not naive. I understand that what I'm suggesting to you has an element of risk to it. Because you could do as I'm suggesting, and you very likely at some point will get pushback and maybe even ridiculed to some extent. But think about it. So what? What's the difference? Ask yourself the question, what is the basis for even going into meditation? If your truth starts and stops with that meditation, what have you done for yourself? I have another suggestion, a simple exercise. Take something that you hold to be true, a basic belief of yours. It doesn't have to be spiritual. And pray over it critically. Dare to allow yourself to come to the conclusion that maybe it isn't exactly so. And the world around us is offering tons of opportunities to do this today. So, for example, if you are a Donald Trump supporter, dare to sit yourself down and allow yourself to at least consider if some of his words and positions are lacking and not good for the country. And if you are a Donald Trump detractor, sit yourself down and allow yourself to really look at the situation and consider the possibility, if there's any potential there, for good to come out of this presidency. You could do the same, you know, evaluating your relationships with your uncles and aunts and your cousins and your siblings and on and on and on and on. There's a very old expression that truth is stranger than fiction. And I absolutely sign on and subscribe to this. And I was thinking about this, and I think the reason why that expression makes sense is because fiction is very uncomfortable with the blanks. Fiction has this need to fill in those blanks so that everything comes nice and smooth and polished in a neat little package and therefore has to be true. But truth has no such need. Truth is very comfortable with the blanks. As far as truth is concerned, those blanks may or may not get filled in if and when the time is right. The truth is not dependent upon time. The truth is not dependent on anybody or anything. It just is. It just is. And so this morning, I really want to close, and I'm serious about this, by making a simple statement. I swear that everything that I have shared with you this morning, I absolutely believe is the truth. It's just not the whole truth. So help me, God.